I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. Today's show, Atlanta's International Airport.
Oh, wow. I don't know if there'd be any city without the airport.
Over 90 million passengers move through the airport each year. It employs 58,000 people, making it the largest employer in Georgia. The airport is an economic engine responsible for $32.5 billion in annual revenues. In many ways, the airport is what makes Atlanta a destination. It's where people come when they come to Atlanta.
It's kind of Southern inspired, with I think just a little global flair on it.
For those visiting, it is the gateway. It's an introduction. It's what sets expectations. And for those just changing planes, it's their only exposure to the city in some cases. The airport is one of the most important touchstones of Atlanta's identity, and it may just be the one we think about the least, or at least don't think about for what it really is, our most visited Atlanta monument.
The history of the airport is really important. When I go through airports, you know, small airports typically do a much better job of telling the story of why they're there. You know, and we have a great story to tell here. I mean, Atlanta was a railroad town, right? So to think that we've become the air flight town, you know, the largest one, that's a huge story. The fact that it started out as a racetrack, you know, is an interesting story. Its location, you know, sort of a derivative of that, the geography. But, you know, we're, like I said, we're a railroad town. So, you know, how did we become this?
And that's what we'll be doing today, telling the history of Atlanta's International Airport and imagining the story that the airport could tell about Atlanta. Today's guests are former mayor of Atlanta, Sam Massell, a man who's chiefly responsible for bringing MARTA to the airport.
One of the gimmicks I pulled, I guess you'd call it, where I went up in a helicopter over the expressway during the rush hour with the public address system and said, if you want to get out of this mess, vote yes. This being the Bible Belt, people thought God was telling them what to do, you know. Well, it worked. Every vote counted, and it was very close.
Experiential branding expert Keith Curtis of Perkins & Will.
We brand cities. We brand people. We brand experiences. Travel does a great job of doing those types of things. You know, you go to a place, for instance, and you have expectations of that place, what it is, where it is, who is there, and what your expectations around what you might see and experience there.
Amateur historian and author of Sunshine Skies, David P. Henderson.
I would kind of look stuff up, and at one point I looked up Atlanta Airport history, and there was one guy that had a website, and he had a bunch of postcards and stuff he had scanned in and posted up there, but his information was all wrong. And I would send him emails. I'd say, well, actually, you know, it was this way, and I've got a picture to prove it, and we'd go back and forth, and finally he just wouldn't return my emails. He got so mad about it, I guess.
And Dwayne Nutter, executive chef at One Flew South, Atlanta Airport's first fine dining experience.
Just a guy in the back with a fork.
But you had to learn somewhere.
Yeah, watching them, watching my mom, you know, my grandmother, and stuff like that. That's where it all came. Sneaking around in the kitchen when you wasn't supposed to.
The houses, they look so tiny. The cars look like dots. We've only got 15 minutes to go. The clouds in the sky caress my mind so tenderly. The sun shines down.
In preparation for takeoff on this, the 12th episode and one-year anniversary show of Sidewalk Radio, please bring your seatbacks to their upright and locked position, make sure your tray table is put away, and all of your carry-on items are stowed. It's our job to provide your in-flight entertainment, a colorful, fascinating, and fun history lesson about perhaps the biggest reason that Atlanta is Atlanta, Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, which, actually began as a racetrack.
That's right, yeah. It was a racetrack that was, the land was purchased by Asa Candler, who was the founder of Coke and at one time was a mayor of Atlanta. And he put, I guess there was a lot of just smaller properties in the area, and he wanted that area because it was flat, which is fairly unusual for Atlanta. You'd have an area that large that was relatively flat. So he purchased the whole thing for like $70,000.
How big are we talking?
Like 200 and almost 300 acres. And put the racetrack there. And I guess it didn't work out as he planned. And within about a year, they shut down. But he still wanted to make money off the land. So he started having air shows, like barnstorming. He'd have these guys come in and do stunts and all that kind of stuff. And he had a lot of big crowds from that. So I guess up until the early 20s, they did that. And at some point, as aviation, you know, they started having airmail companies and carriers. And I guess Atlanta was looking for a suitable spot for an airport so they wouldn't get left behind. And so they sent out, it was William B. Hartsfield at the time, early 20s, that they sent him out to scout for a suitable location. So he found that one since it was large and flat. So about 1925 or so, they had airmail carriers begin.
There are 49,000 airports.
Mm-hmm.
We're the busiest one in the world.
On the planet, yeah.
Why?
The reason for that dates back to the even late 30s, where it's kind of like Atlanta with the railroads. We're here because it was a crossroad or just a junction between two railroads. So Atlanta Airport was kind of a... Delta flew east to west, and Eastern Airlines at the time flew from Florida up north. And these planes, they realized they could connect. They developed what's called the hub and spoke system. Basically, the idea of that is you have just planes from all over the region and, you know, all over the country now, all over the planet, come in at one time. We have these days, you know, 100 planes come in within 45 minutes of each other. And what that does is it allows any person on any of those flights to connect to any other city. And Delta Airlines pretty much was responsible for that. And even by the early 40s, Atlanta, there were times of the day where it was the busiest airport on the planet, even though, you know, even then in the southeast, Atlanta wasn't even the biggest city in the southeast.
One thing that happened actually before I became mayor is that a state senator named Everett Milliken, that's back when we Fulton County had one state senator and three House members, was the one that put in the law that all the money at the airport had to stay at the airport. And you just can't imagine how important that is. Believe me, with all the money that that airport generates, every mayor, including Sam Marcel, would have pulled that money out to use for other purposes, because there are always needs. There's always a place where you want more money for city services and facilities. And it's because we've got that guaranteed income at the airport that the airport has been able to grow to the world's largest airport. In other words, when they need money for another concourse, when they need money for another landing strip, when they need money for another parking garage, a deck, or whatever, no matter what it is, they've got the resources with which to do that. And believe me, that is the magic of that airport. That's the reason that that's the biggest, busiest airport in the whole world.
To be the biggest, the airport had to grow. And it had to evolve to match changes in technology of air travel. And it was that physical transformation, that form following function, that in many ways defines what the airport is today. And the biggest transformation followed in the jet stream.
Yeah, that was the introduction of jet aircraft. And that was about 1958. Delta got its first jets. And what that did, that first of all, it cut travel time in half. You can fly from here, and the first jets were actually faster than what they've got now. It's just they burned so much gas, they kind of slowed them down. But you could go from here to California in 3.5 hours, where previously it would sometimes take, you know, 10 hours or more because they would have to make refueling stops. Also with jets, you can fly over the weather, which you couldn't do in the piston aircraft. A lot of people don't realize that in the 1940s, you didn't have pressurized aircraft, and these planes were really slow and bumpy and not air-conditioned, and people were getting sick all the time, even up through the early 60s. But the jet aircraft pretty much bypassed all that. So it was 1961, they opened a terminal that was specifically designed for jet aircraft. because they realized that was going to be the future, and the planes were so much bigger than the older piston airplanes. They had to have a larger facility. And the previous, like I said, they were using a war surplus hangar, and it was basically cinder blocks and, you know, plywood coverings, and it just looked terrible. So that was their chance to kind of present a really great image to the traveling public. So they had this big terminal they built, which at the time was the largest in the world, and it was, I think, the first one on the planet designed specifically for jets. And I guess you would consider it mid-century modern is what they would call it now, but it had the big barrel vaulted ceilings and the turquoise paneling, and had a big control tower right in the middle of it. It had turquoise neon letters that said Atlanta, so when you landed in Atlanta at night, you could see the city name. And so it really presented a good image to the traveling public.
And that image that the airport presents to the traveling public means a lot, mostly because our traveling public's so big, the biggest, in fact. As such, the airport has to be efficient, has to be easy to navigate, and it has to accommodate business travelers and families alike. But it also, inevitably, will be a representation of Atlanta as well. The question, then, is how best to do that?
First of all, our airport is very different from a lot of others. Most of the people come in, their destination is actually somewhere other than Atlanta. So they're in and out very quickly. So the brand has to edit itself, so to speak, to talk to somebody, communicate to somebody something in a much faster way. It needs, the airport itself should act as a destination to communicate what Atlanta's brand is. How do they brand themselves to be current, to tell stories, to communicate, you know, what's happening in Atlanta around art and culture in a place that has more visitors than most museums?
How do they?
Maybe it needs to treat itself a little bit more like a museum, like a destination for people to come and experience something new.
This notion of turning the airport into a museum can be as simple as putting up more exhibits with better information, but it can also be taken in unexpected ways and can be taken quite literally outside the walls of the building itself. Think about it. The process of flying actually allows us to turn the city into a kind of museum.
And one of the most beautiful things is flying into, like, Paris at night, you know. I mean, it's, you sort of understand why they call it the City of Lights, you know. It's just absolutely beautiful, and you get there and you sort of see the lay of the city, you know, and how it's been developed, and it's really beautiful. And as opposed to flying into Chicago, which is a grid, it's just pure gridlock, right? And every street light is lined up. It's like looking at a circuit board when you're flying into it, and it's a very different experience.
I remember in Stanley once when former President Harry Truman was coming through Atlanta at the airport on his way to Savannah, Georgia, and I was at the time president of the city council and vice mayor, and the mayor, Ivan Allen, was out of town, so I made arrangements to go out and greet the president at the airport where he had a layover of a couple of hours, and he had never seen Atlanta. The president of the United States, you know, they had come through the train station a few times because his wife didn't like to fly, but they had never seen Atlanta. And I brought him downtown in this layover he had of about an hour and a half between flights and on Sunday. And the owner of the, I'm trying to remember the name of it, Peachtree something, restaurant downtown at Five Points up on the top floor where they had a panoramic view, opened it up just for us to come up. Instantly, he asked the president, he said, "Mr. President, would you like a drink?" He said, "Oh, you damn tootin' I would," you know. But he, I don't know if that broke the law or not, but we had the chief of police with us anyway, so Herbert Jenkins at that time. But from there, he could see out all these windows in all directions of downtown Atlanta, and that was his first view of downtown Atlanta. And I'll tell you one thing, of course, and this came vividly to my face when I was mayor. I wasn't aware of it so much until then, that every major visitor that came to City Hall would first say, what a wonderful, a significant, dramatic tree canopy we had. Nobody had ever seen that many trees. In fact, they'd say, where are the houses? You know, when you do fly over, you do see that. You do see the trees. But, you know, there are a few openings. If I were, if I had a business that wanted to market itself and the name, I think I'd think about doing a little bit on my roof. You know, not just the name, but maybe some interesting murals or something, and attract some attention.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Atlanta's International Airport, brought to you by Perkins & Will. We're talking today about the history of Atlanta's airport and what the airport can and should say about the city. One of our best stories, and one of the easiest access points for the harried traveler, is through food. Let's begin with the first restaurant ever at Atlanta Airport.
Definitely during the 1940s, there was a terminal they had kind of, it was called the temporary terminal that they built out of an old military surplus hangar that was still there. And they had just a gift shop and eventually put a restaurant in there. But I think they realized all these people are basically stuck in this building for sometimes several hours at a time so they could make extra money, that kind of thing.
What was the first restaurant?
I think it was Dobbs House. And I also, I have a postcard of that. They, by today's standards, couldn't get away with it, but they had, it was an Uncle Remus theme, and they had like cotton, you know, bales of hay and cotton and stuff out there, and they had an old guy that would come out and tell Uncle Remus stories while you wait to be seated. And
what did they serve?
I think it was just probably Southern cooking, you know, just typical cafeteria fare probably.
Since that first restaurant, the airport's changed, and Atlanta's changed. One interesting fact is that there are actually more concessions, restaurants, and shops at Atlanta's airport than there are at Lenox Mall. To conclude our show today, we have with us Chef Dwayne Nutter to give us a vision and taste of what the Atlanta airport is fast becoming.
Name is Dwayne Nutter. Some folks call me Chef Dwayne or Chef Nutter, and I'm an executive chef for One Flew South on the International Concourse of Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. It's kind of cool. You got some recycled Georgia pine on the floor. Right, and it's like you're eating in this wooden box, and the ceiling tiles have these wood slabs going across, and it's not completely cold, closed off, so it's kind of airy, but yet you can see the people walking by, but they can't really see you eating, and you know, there's white Georgia marble tabletops, nice white leather chairs, have a sushi bar sitting there, and it's pretty, they got a mural on one of the walls, because it is a small space, only 86 seats, and it's a picture of a Georgia forest. And so it's real, as soon as you walk in, it's like, oh, I'm not in the airport anymore.
That's nice.
And that's how people miss their flights, too. Four course?
Yeah, tell me what I would have if I came in, you know, today.
Today, it's looking good for you to have Lammergeier sausage. And that'll be served with a soybean succotash with mint and curry oil. You'll start off with that. And then you will have yourself arugula salad with grilled asparagus and some orange segments with the Szechuan peppercorn vinaigrette. Have that. And we'll probably give you, as your entree, looking at you, you look like a fish guy. So I'm going to go with the salmon hot pot. It's a little variation on that dish. And I do a nagi fried rice, and I do a little miso broth right in there in a little pool, seared salmon. And for dessert, give you a pineapple not upside down cake.
Not upside down.
Yeah, I do some bourbon braised pineapples. And serve it with this pumpkin bread. Hit it with a little vanilla whipped cream on top. And the bourbon sauce. Have just a regular old airport dining menu for you.
Now I just need to find somewhere to go.
That's happened quite a few times. A few people leaving and going, I've been in the United States for 2 weeks. And the best meal I had was on my way out.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Sam Massell, Keith Curtis, David Henderson, and Chef Dwayne Nutter. You've been listening to Sidewalk Radio, brought to you by Perkins & Will. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. We'll see you next month.